Welcome, everybody, to our podcast On the First Tee, where we look at a view of golf from behind the scenes. My name is Ian Butcher. I am the program lead at SRUC in golf course management, and my co-host.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Matthews, a lecturer in sustainable golf course management, an occasional weekend greenkeeper in St. Andrews, and as always, a forever hopeful golfer.
So why are we here, Ben? And what can the listeners expect? In our work at SRUC, we always talk about how we believe that golf is a force for good. We're passionate about the game of golf, and we're very lucky because we meet people all the time who are working in various roles behind the scenes, and they share with us and our students their expertise, they share their career journeys, but we've found that they're also sharing the love of what they're doing and where they're working. And we thought, why not share it?
And Ian, we have found that talking with this network of incredible people is always compelling. So it made perfect sense to invite these stakeholders of golf onto a podcast to discuss the issues that matter to them and the happiness that they've found in their careers within this industry. The podcast also gives us a great opportunity to highlight the outstanding careers that can be found within the game of golf, from the traditional to the new and emerging. We think all of these things are worth talking about, and we hope you do too. So please join Ian and myself on the First Tee for a view of golf from behind the scenes.
Today, myself and Ben Matthews and Caroline are very pleased to welcome Simon Olver, from course manager from Ganton Golf Club. Good afternoon, Simon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Ian. I've been looking forward to since catching up for the last week, and happy to take part. And the sun's just came out. I've just noticed there's the blinds behind us, which I have never seen for about 4 weeks. So. It's a good day.
We do that. We do that on this podcast, okay? We've got this connection. It's a spiritual connection with upstairs, and we bring the sunshine out when people join us. So yeah, I'm pleased it worked down there. Ganton, tell us just before... go on, Simon.
Just going to say we need to make it a daily podcast if that is the case. So just to...
Well, just for the listeners' benefit, do remind us where Ganton is. Most golfers will know, but just in case.
So Ganton is North Yorkshire, so we're about 8 miles in from Scarborough. It's built on an old sea inlet from millions of years ago. Very quiet part of the country. Lovely setting. Its course was formed 1891. Very traditional course. And as I say, it's... Sorry, go on.
Now, we were lucky enough to see it with the R&A scholarship event because you're an R&A scholar and you did a course walk with us, and it was so impressive to see that location and also just the unique character of that golf course. Absolutely stunning piece of inland golf, isn't it?
Yeah, we're very lucky. It's a pleasure to come. You drive down that road, drive every morning, and you sort of switch off. You come to work to sort of chill out with things. And there's a lot going on, but it's a nice place to be.
Brilliant. And tell us, just to get the ball rolling then, Simon, tell us, please, how you came into this industry. And I do believe it was something to do with playing the game.
Yeah, I think similar to... many people that come into the industry. It's sort of 16-year-old. I thought it was an opportunity to play lots of golf. So, as I say, I found myself with an interest with golf as I grew up, and then the opportunity came up, and I was actually following a direction to be an accountant when I was younger, and jumped ship and sort of came towards golf. So it was great. Did do that, but as you sort of progress through, you get less time to play golf. But yeah, I came in through a genuine interest and just loved the game of golf.
I'm going to call it the courtesy golf, but the free golf is such a bonus, isn't it, in this industry? I mean, we're so lucky to be able to visit different venues and be made welcome because we're in the industry. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, I think that it's just such a perk with the job. And even now, you know, it's great on a to come with my son on a weekend or play or, you know, with the staff or and get him invested. But all through my career at different levels and going back to 16, it was probably when I was a full-time golfer, I would put it that way, and liked in my head to think I was a part-time greenkeeper. But you used to, you know, used to do sometimes holes before work, holes after work, but the network and opportunity and also the ability to play other golf courses. So I think that it just fitted really well into what I enjoyed about golf. It was just a natural transition over, and the more I sort of built up an enjoyment in the job, it definitely sparked. But it's definitely the way that you sort of see a lot of people coming into the industry, and I was one of them.
We're going to just venture into a little bit of controversy, perhaps, with this next question then. Because if you study with us, you will be positively encouraged to play the game. Positively encouraged to play the game as part of your learning journey with us. Simon, do you think you're a better course manager because you play the game?
The answer is yes. I think it doesn't make you on some areas, because that's where the education and experience comes in. But I would always suggest to staff that if they don't like golf, you know, that's fair enough, but just to get as involved as they are comfortable with. But playing the game will allow you to see things differently from a different angle. And even we try to play as with my deputy or with the team where we can, because you can be in such a negative all week and then get out on the golf course and think, actually, this is great. And it just allows you to see different things, but from course setup to pin position, understanding the reasoning behind the process, we do tasks and just look at things in a different light. So I do think that having an interest in golf, playing would be great, but also, you know, people watch golf and do things. Just allows you to understand the inner workings of what we do.
Yeah. It's insight, isn't it, Simon? It's a bit of insight.
It just allows you to sort of, you know, you see areas that, you know, that because where we're on a golf course, you're your own biggest critic. And that's the bit over the years that, you know, a lot of times you used to, you know, that additional work or going in doing stuff that, you look back now and it was really just for my own benefit, you know, when you look around and everything. So it just gives you that feeling that, and also interacting with members, you know, interacting with the club. I think building relations with the club are a big thing, but just playing with different levels of golfers across just helps you be able to do the job and see things from sort of a different viewpoint instead of just in schedule and out you go and back in. So it's such a benefit. I think if you took the game out of greenkeeping, then I'll maybe be in a different industry potentially. I love everything around it, but my real interest, and still I'm a real golf geek, and as my wife will tell us, you know, it's every time she comes into the living room, it's on the TV. So it's sort of directed my career through, but definitely a integral part of both. They both complement each other, I think.
That brings us on to another question about your role at Ganton, Simon, because I was taking a look at your CV just before you came on, and you know, you've identified that as a key strength and a key role at Ganton is communicating, you know, with the members and the board at Ganton. So obviously golf helps you do that. You know, could you just describe your role and do you think it's a typical course manager role, or is there something about it that where you take a bit of extra new directions?
I think, you know, my role's very sort of, I would say, standard, but try to perform at the best level I can. And there's areas which you're interested in more than others, but just having a clear view of everything. And at Ganton, I would say it's a very traditional golf club. So I sort of everything green I look after, and the team. My role is more of a managing the team, I would say. As I've progressed through career, it's went from managing grass, which we do, but is motivating and managing a team, and that's where I get my enjoyment. So I focus a lot of the time around what I do, around the team. We've obviously done a lot of development over, I've been at Ganton for 4 years now, four and a bit years, and a redevelopment is, you know, it's a bit of a generic term, but we're very unique at Ganton. So we're doing a lot of course changes to keep things current, but while keeping a traditional aspect and a real focus on what makes Ganton Ganton. So we manage, you know, throughout the year, we've got tournaments on and off. But generally we're very standard, you know, it's a standard role. Throughout and something we get a lot of enjoyment from. And we've got nine staff full time now, and we'll go to 11 in the summer. And we've sort of progressed. It's been a great journey since arriving, and it was a fortunate time where we were in the process of starting the Martin Ebert, like a master plan, working with Martin Ebert to look through the course. We'd also looked at there'd unfortunately been a fire sort of 15 months before. So the facilities were in a process where it was just coming out the ground, and I was involved with the final bits of planning. So I had my input into that, and, you know, where I'm sitting now is we're very fortunate. We've got a fantastic sort of facility and greenkeeping facility. But other aspects of the course, you know, from, you know, the due to environmental pressures, we were looking at, you know, we'd lost quite a bit of grass coverage over the years. So we're looking at what we're actually inputting, how we input that, how we manage the turf, how we can be more sustainable, the same as everyone else, you know, how we meet expectation, which is ever increasing within budgets, and just how we can use the budget, which is available, as well as we can across the site. So the investment's been across, you know, for everything from the golf course to the clubhouse to the staff to the facilities. So it's been a real fun place to be, and still is. You know, we're well through it, and we're consolidating, you know, areas now, and looking at refining, really refining areas. And, you know, we're still looking at the transition for composition for fairways, and, you know, and we're working a lot. One example of that is we're using a lot 100% hard fescue on fairways, which is pretty standard for, you know, links courses now, and just hedging our bets, because the one thing that we don't know is sort of how the weather's going to be. We can sort of guesstimate it as much as we can, but we don't have sort of full control. We don't have fairway irrigation, so I would say sort of 70% of our budget goes on wetting agents. So the pot is we're fortunate it's quite big, but we've jiggled the budget around, you know, and making better use of that pool of money, and looking at what we can do to retain the surfaces and maintain the expectations as the climate evolves and changes. We lose pesticides, you know. There's a big challenge has been we had a big problem with leather jackets, and we've worked with that. But this is one of the benefits indirectly with the hard fescue is sort of the resistance to leather jackets. So as well as the drought, you know, and hedging our bets against the sort of environmental pressure, it as products are removed down the line, you know, we're looking at putting grasses in the golf course that allow us to be a bit more protected where we can.
Simon, I wanted to, you touched on tournaments a while back there, and amazing history at Ganton of tournaments. Just to obviously to mention a few of the big ones, the 1949 Ryder Cup, which our American cousins took, unfortunately, 7-5 on that one, or fortunately, depending on what side of the pond you're on. 2000 Curtis Cup, I think the Americans won that, and 2003 Walker Cup, I believe. And I see you guys have a sort of a regular gamut of local or national sort of tournaments, if you want to call them that. What sort of tournaments are you hoping to attract in the future, or is that an objective for you and the course?
Yeah, as the course picks up, I mean, you know, like following on from you know, the tournaments in the early 2000s, where sort of a key R&A venue, on amateur venue. And since I've been here, we've hosted sort of like the seniors championship, the boys and girls, we have the Brabazon. And we're working hard with, you know, with all stakeholders and everybody that's involved to sort of get the golf course in a position where it can hold the largest tournament that's possible. as everything evolves, you know, we're working closely with, you know, as things get bigger, it's what we can actually host. But, you know, we're still open to hosting as big a tournament as possible. You know, there's no sort of, from our side, we are a club that focuses on our, you know, our history is key to the golf club, and, you know, all the members embrace it. So it's something that it's like the positive circus that comes to town, and, you know, all the members buy into it. And it was fantastic to see over the years how excited that's get. It's not something that I've been, you know, like sometimes competitions of some all levels don't all have a full positive effect through a golf club because of disruption, but it was really positive and great to see and refreshing to see that the members and how they were bought into the tournaments. So I think on your question of where we would like to be is we're sort of open-minded and working with everyone, but we would like to definitely host regular tournaments, which would be a mixture of smaller tournaments and then also push towards hosting as big a tournament as possible.
As long as the Americans don't win.
No, we just need some wind and then they can't play.
Can I take you back a little bit there, Simon? On the members, what about the members' expectations then? When you said it was a traditional club, and it is, what would that mean from a member's expectation about the playing surface? What are they expecting to see? And are those expectations changing at all, or do they have roots in the whole history of the club?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. I think it's like a two angled answer to you. So I think for Ganton, the simple answer is firm, fast, traditional, you know, not overly managed, pristine services, if that can all be one in one sentence, but very traditional in a sense, whereas the expectation now, without knowing it, I think, you know, if you chat with people, they believe that back in the 70s and 60s, the standards were the same as what they are now, but through products, knowledge, support, products that we know that we have moved on, and that's where the expectations lifted. So the expectation, I think, if you've generalized everything from a Ganton member, would be to have sort of yellowed off fairways in the summer with firm as possible, fast greens, and just flowing through. So it's sort of like the running game, very not overly managed, sort of outside the playing lines. So we always sort of look, and I always have done, but this is the first golf course where it's a true sort of realization that it is sort of a golf course in the nature reserve. So outside of out where we manage, we are very low inputs, even on sort of managed turf. But outside of that, you've got sort of like this wilderness, you know, managed to a point to prevent succession, and, you know, as things do. But it's more a bespoke management plan, which looks at the minimum amount of input into these areas to achieve what we need to do, while maintaining pristine fairways, pristine, you know, tees, greens. And yeah, so minimum input, firm, fast, traditional. If you could flip a switch and go back and sort of look at the Open in the 80s and 90s, sort of that's where we are. And I think Gary Player said it was the only inland course that is sort of capable to host the Open. So in lines, it's not a Lynx course, a true Lynx course. It's a bit of a hybrid, but it's probably one of the driest, if not, golf course I've ever seen on pure sand anywhere you go. So it's got the environment to create that. And you look in the roughs and what's grown in there, it naturally wants to be what the members expected to be. We've just got to give it a little bit of a nudge at times to get there.
Along those lines, Simon, of membership expectations and sustainability, you know, we're touching on that obviously in your answer there. I'm going to guess the response from members is, as long as the playing surface is what we want, they're happy with it. But are you getting buy-in from the members around sustainability initiatives in regards to managing the golf course? Are they buying into that, or are they more sort of clubhouse buying into it, you know, the recycling and locally sourced food and that kind of stuff?
It's a great question, that. So yeah, I think that it's, you know, it's through, you know, go back to Ian's point of communication he touched on there before. I think that it's all, everything we do in a golf course is sort of communication. and how we get that out. And also, you know, we're fortunate we work through the RNA and support we get. You know, we've worked very closely with ecologists, and we've got a, you know, a good support network around us now who do regular visits. You know, we're looking at sort of, we're doing surveying sites from everything that's on the golf course, and we're able to communicate that back through the membership. But also involving sort of groups and people with an interest outside the golf course. Ganton was very, you know, very sort of closed doors over the years. And, it is a private and exclusive golf course. But bringing them people onto the golf course and allowing them to communicate to the outside world is probably one of the biggest things, because we all get in a little bubble on a golf course that, you know, golf is we know that golf is probably, you know, how responsible we are with everything we do, but it gets a bit of bad press, you know, so we need to keep working on that. But I think the buy-in, back to your question about the buy-in from the members, is it's a slow burner, and now that, you know, it comes down to the communication we had and what we're doing. So I think there's always been that buy-in of a sustainable, low maintenance, low input, firm, fast golf course, and that from that aspect. But there's a lot of wild, you know, people who like wildlife, people, you know, who like, you know, everything out there. But I think now joining the dots and bringing everything together is sort of it's essential for, I think, every level of golf course. I think it ties into, you know, people who might come into the industry. It might, you know, because if people's got more of a positive view on, you know, golf, then rightly so as well, you know, because we are, you know, we do everything. I know, you know, courses vary throughout, but you'd like to think that we have got our finger on the pulse to and we enjoy being responsible as well. You know, the one of my best feelings in the morning is being out hand warming greens or changing holes, sun's coming up, wildlife, you know, if you put your fingers in your ears, it's not as good an experience. You know, you start smelling, hearing everything that's going on, and I always think that's exactly the same for golfers. You know, you can go to a site and take the wildlife away and you won't have the experience or the environment or the surroundings.
Membership buy-in important, as you said, but community buy-in, showing them what you're doing on the golf course that is environmentally friendly, that's good for the environment. Community buy-in, so important to long-term sustainability of the golf course. You obviously see that. Do you think that that's something that the industry needs to see more of at golf courses? Is it slowly building up, do you think, or are we heading in the right direction?
I think we're definitely heading in the right direction. You know, it's getting a lot of media, you know, a lot more time, you know, on mainstream media, you know, then you can see everyone's work and all the stakeholders where we can. And it is a bit of a slow burner, but I think we can, same as communication, the answer is you can always do more. And I think involving people, and you're not going to convince everyone, you know, but if you're doing the right thing, you're out there, you're highlighting the positives, then it all factors together. You know, we're looking at legislations for chemicals and products and, you know, all that if that in that headspace is the same as what some of the public are, that the golf isn't sustainable and responsible, then their mindset might be changed. Whereas if we actually highlight how focused we are to being as sustainable and responsible as we can, and the big thing is on the back of it means you spend less money as well. You know, that's the big, you know, if we look at it from a commercial, from a business sense, is it does make business sense, because you've got less inputs, as in products, but also work, you know, and recovery and maintenance and stuff. So that's where we're very fortunate that allow us to use that budget to allow us to maintain the environments that keep Ganton.
Not just Ganton. No. I think it's such an important conversation because we want golf to be affordable. And so you're talking about, you know, the bottom line there and making it affordable by doing, you know, good environmental practice and having a broader brief, you know, to the role of presenting a golf course so that it is affordable. You've highlighted the positives there. What do you think the challenges are? You've been an active member of Bigger. And you've supported that organization, the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. You've been an active member supporting that. From that perspective, as you got around the country a little bit more outside of your own venue, what do you think right now in 2025 the challenges are for the golf course management side of life?
I think going back to, you know, when you touched on there about not just Gantt everywhere, you know, I think the inclusion's a big, you know, section for golf getting in. I think that the inclusion and the ability to bring people into the game of golf, get that love of golf, even things like you look at, you know, the new Rory and Tiger, you know, the new on Sky golf section, just doing things slightly different. Or you look at R&A's, the golf it, you know, in Glasgow, you know, and stuff, that ability, because, you know, there needs to be different levels of entry for golf courses, and the ability to come in, you know, in a more relaxed environment. And because golf's quite, if you come into golf like I did, it sort of 15, 14, even younger, it's naturally in you. So when you get to sort of 20-year-old, but a golf course can be quite a scary place when, you know, if you're just new to golf. So I think bringing people through is the big thing. And I think that leads us on to one of the main areas is recruitment and retention. So as I talked about my route in, if the interest's not there at golf, there's not going to be the people like myself there to join in and go and play golf. And going back in North Northumberland when I was a member at sort of CEOs, and I'm sure this echoes through, you know, many clubs, that there was a big junior section when I was sort of growing up. But I can remember after that, it really faded off. Right. And I don't think there's sort of a junior section like committed to it now at that club. And a lot of that's to do, I think, with the drive and publicity the game gets, you know, the interest bringing it through. And I think there was actually a gap, with there being a gap of, you know, of people playing golf, that we can see that in the recruitment side. So we're having to look at different avenues and different, you know, and really focus. And we've got some great members of staff, you know, again, but it's come from other industries and change of careers with a good attitude and, you know, looking at it. Whereas I think it's been more diverse across, you know, like all different areas, and open-minded to how you're going to do things or how people will work. And then the retention, you know, that's a big thing, is building awareness and understanding, the same as, you know, talking about, communicating out about how responsible we are. I think, you know, it's getting it out to the, you know, to everybody who's sort of key, you know, key to the industry, that we need to keep up with pay scales in other industries. Because I see it quite often that even people that love the industry, if they have more, if they have responsibilities, you know, outside of work put pressure on and have to consider other options, then it might drive a change. And that is a loss to the industry. So I think there is a lot of progression. And I think looking at things, there is movement going through, and not just looking at salary coming in is sort of what you can tie in, you know, and sort of look at the ever-changing world, you know, well, you know, private healthcare as well, and different things where making the role more appealing. But I think that's a huge pressure. Environmental pressure has got to be huge. You know, I think that you know, we're looking at how things are going, I guess, you know, I know it's covered hugely, but things are getting more extreme. Total volumes aren't really increasing that much, just how extreme it's coming down, or the levels of drought. So as touched on at Gantt, one of our biggest problems, we're not having fair irrigation, is keeping grass cover in the summer. And, you know, we do want it sort of firm and fast, but it's that difference between dormant and dead. So I think working with that, and then chemical bans, you know, I touched on that, is which comes back to the sustainability side, is preparation and being prepared. Because it's, I think everyone talks about we're a few years, you know, 5 years behind France, you know, looking at how, you know, with how things move. And so it's coming. We've got a lot of emergency regulations and things to tie us through, but it all joins together. We are going to lose more. It is going to cause problems. And if you're not prepared, it's going to be a real issue, because the bit that we can't do is, you know, a good example is the leather jacket issue. So products were removed. You've got the problem. You've got the you know, decimation of grass through the grubs, but you've also got the crow, you know, you've got that out. And, you know, to simply, you know, explain to a golfer that not to expect the same standards, but there's nothing we can do with it, just doesn't cut the mustard at times. At times there's not a lot we can do, but in preparation, building an environment which sustains, you know, a better playing environment during these extremes is a real focus we need to be on. So I think that them three sort of, you know, are four areas, sort of inclusion, recruitment and retention, environmental pressure, and pesticide sort of removal or regulation are sort of at the top of the list, I would think. Yeah, legislation, I would think that is... Because it's the way everything's going, and it's not a bad thing. You know, you look back at now with stuff you used, and, you know, there's good reasons why, you know, things are being removed. But there's also bits where I think if we come across as a responsible user, which we are, but also look outside the box at how, you know, they might always have this idea in my head is, you know, if we can't use the product, you know, if you might want to not want to do it, but if there was, say, 10 licensed companies in the country who could use them and you had to close your course for 4 days and it was a hell of a lot of money, then you still have the option. If you want to do it, you can do it. And I think this all comes from building a better understanding about how focused we are to being responsible, I think.
And now a quick break to hear from SRUC about their exhibition at the Royal Highland Show 2025.
Heading to the Royal Highland Show this year? Don't miss your chance to discover the future of SRUC and have a bit of fun whilst you're at it. Come and visit us on 7th Avenue, right beside the main show ring. Whether you're curious about courses, careers, or just up for some interactive fun, then we've got something for everyone. Come and hook a Hilda or try your hand at the welding simulator. Have a swing at mini golf with SRUC putts or learn to save a life with some animal CPR. Visit local producers at our alumni farmers market Saturday or explore our show garden for a burst of inspiration. You'll meet our brilliant teams from Vet Services, the School of Veterinary Medicine and SSE Consulting, plus chat to student ambassadors and our Students Association who are potting your very own plant. Whether you're into science, sustainability, animals or agriculture, or just want to know where your future can grow, come and find out more about our courses, research and student life. SRUC. Find your place, grow your future.
And now, back to the podcast. Simon, on the RNA Scholarship Day, I think it was 2023, I believe, you gave a brilliant talk about sort of your integrated pest management approach there at Ganton. And it was, from what I can remember, it was around that leather jacket issue. And obviously, as you said, these products that were on the market, they're now not available. But you've implemented this IPM approach to solving or remedying your leather jacket problem. Can you just tell us a little bit about that multi-pronged approach that meant you didn't have to depend on a pesticide, but you still have gotten to that, you know, objective of preventing the damage or remedying the damage?
Yeah, so again, it's just such a mixed bag. We've got so many different, you know, from preventing the problem, we'll start off one is the, you know, preventing, you know, the crows, you know, that's the biggest, you know, issue, you know, one of them. So from crow scarers to kites to things you wouldn't expect to see on a golf course to even, you know, someone out shooting but not shooting anything, just making a racket, which the local residents aren't too fond of. But other things, you know, like touching on the hard fescue, you know, we've seen great results. And we actually found some sort of colonial hard fescue through our 15th fairway. And when we were really savagely hit, there was these areas were untouched. And whether it's the lignin in the roots or exudates from the roots, but you find that there isn't the interest from the grubs in hard fescue. So that's one of the sort of indirect benefits, you know, we're looking at. But we do a lot of fairway top dressing, you know, try that profile, keep that profile dry. And even things like, you know, like sheeting, you know, a lot of people do sheeting. It's very time consuming and our profile drains so fast. We don't have the same results that a lot of places do because, you know, you sort of drench the profile to then sweat them out and bring them out of the water. But the second we put the water on, it's gone. So we do have sort of results with that. But I think one of the biggest things is that we found that I know that is getting quite a bit of interest from the seed sort of companies and doing stuff and now being communicated that through whatever reason it does, the hard fescue is resistant in some ways to grub damage.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it, from an environmental perspective? I mean, these pesticides did work great, but it's great to know that if we take a slightly different approach, we can cut that out and still achieve these things that we need to achieve to get the surfaces we want. Yeah, brilliant.
Definitely. And, you know, cost of fungicides now is in pesticides is ludicrous. And also that, you know, as the user, you know, there's stuff that, God, when I sort of started, that you think now that you just used to, you would probably go out with a little mask on and stuff. And if it was me, I would be like 18 now, you know, it's just sort of done. So it's got to be a good thing in the long, you know, the long run. But also we touched on at the start there that, you know, I class this as a wildlife reserve with a golf course in it. And if I was in a wildlife reserve, I would be spraying as few chemicals as I could. So it's got to be from a standpoint that way that it's useful.
That's a lovely expression, Simon. Love that wildlife reserve that people play golf in. I'm going to ask you one last question for me anyway. You know, just looking back on your career, and I'm not suggesting for one moment, you know, you're still very early on in your career, but looking back at your career, what would you do differently, if anything at all?
Lots. No, I think that it's not something I would do differently. I think it's greenkeeping gives you, I was just chatting about this today, actually, that there's not many industries that you could do 12 to 18 months in a job and then go anywhere around the world. And I think that's got to be one of the big draws, you know, that's communicated, you know, really well through. And then people have different reasons, whether it's, you know, degree level or different. But I think everybody can buy into, at some point, the ability to follow your dreams. You know, it might, you know, everybody has different sort of direction and dreams. But one thing, because I came in sort of for my first head greenkeeper job, I got when I was sort of 19 year old, I didn't get the opportunity to go somewhere else, you know, or take that opportunity. So looking back, it's something that if anyone asked if I could do something not differently but added in, I would probably do that. But then I ask the question is, would I be sitting talking to you now? You don't know where I would have been. So the journey would have been different. So it's not that I would have done everything different, because I'm very fortunate. And I did, you know, there's a lot of work to get here, you know, and, you know, you've got to put it in. But I think that looking at that, I'm quite envious of people who've had that or done that in their career.
Yeah, we can't question the gods, can we? How they direct us. But 19, Simon, 19, that was young to be taking on a responsibility, wasn't it? How did you cope with that? I was 28 and I didn't cope. I was too young at 28. How did you cope at 19?
I just did the best I could. You made lots of mistakes, but also, you know, you have to. You go back now, and I think in life, you know, you talk about that 19. It was such a great experience, but it's quite. You think at that age, you know everything, you know, and it's actually when you get a bit older, you realize that you didn't know very much at all, and the mistakes you made, and that's what curves your career, and you learn from the experience. But I think I was 19 year old, so I didn't want to take. I was still, you know, doing everything a 19-year-old did, and it was on a great Dunsinbrough Castle golf course, and it was a, you know, braid links, and it was brilliant. But it was quite quiet, and, you know, out the way, and we did everything we could. But yeah, as I say, I'm sure, you know, there was a lot of things I look back on now that I could have done slightly different. But I think getting that opportunity, and you need a little bit of luck, no matter what you do, and so that came to me then, and that sort of forged how I went on through that. And, you know, it I knew I had a real passion for it pretty early on. And then one thing that, you know, I did my level 2 very quickly, my level 3 very quickly, but then there was quite a gap till I started my foundation degree, simply because, you know, there was a lot of responsibility, and I was still sort of quite young, you know, being in charge. So when my sort of life gives that opportunity, you know, and real focus is when I sort of got through it, because I felt that I needed to gain the experience first. And the good thing about that I've found about starting on smaller courses is you do everything. So it allows you to learn skills very quickly, not necessarily all correct, but it gives you the ability and the confidence if that's, you know, to then step through and take challenges and test yourself. But Back to the question about, you know, how did you cope with 19? I just did the best I possibly, best I could, while still being a child, basically.
The inner child. But you mentioned a word there that we picked up at the recent R&A scholarship celebration of 25 years when it was Adam that was asked about, you know, the qualities required, you know, to be successful in golf course management. And he used the word passion. And you've just used the word passion. I just can't resist asking you, did that passion that you had at 19 for the game of golf and for your role, did that ever get you into trouble? I'm asking because it got me into trouble.
I wouldn't say trouble, but it's definitely, you know, I was always pushing for more, as in, you know, I'd looked at things and, you know, as what we'd want to achieve. So it was always, and I think that's my focus I've had through my career is, you know, it's basically not so much a salesman, but you sell dreams, you know, and concepts, you know, and realities, and you learn to build that across because, it's very easy to have an opinion on something when it's done, but to sell a concept is quite tough. So I think that some of the, you know, troubles was maybe taking on too much. You know, I think that you know, too much too fast. So that was probably a big thing back then, and a life lesson for me is sort of just, you know, work life balance and enjoy what you do with passion. You know, I think going back to your point about passion, I think that anything you do inside and out of work, that it makes a huge difference. And having a passion for whatever you choose to do in life is the decision between doing something, going above and beyond, or doing, you know, a job well. And I think it's that, whether you're a sportsman, whether you're a, you know, a bank manager, whether you're, you know, anything, that it's that passion in life. And even playing golf outside of work, you know, it's that keeps us coming back. Play terrible, but then you're back the next day for a game of golf.
Guys, it's like we rehearsed this podcast, because Simon, you've brought up passion. Ian, you've mentioned success. Simon, you've obviously had some incredible success from an early age in your career. You're speaking today. I've heard you speak before. You're passionate about the industry, about the job. Coming full circle now that you're in the role that you're in, how are you encouraging passion in your new employees or in the next generation? How are you encouraging and motivating these guys to be passionate and set them up for success in their journey down the road?
I think listening's a key aspect of as you get old, you realize everyone's slightly different. So it's understanding that individual, and you don't get everything right. All you can be is that, you know, the best, you know, and you sort of class everyone as friends. And I mentioned this in all the sort of podcasts or talks I do, that you'll spend more time at work than I do with my family. So we want to enjoy it. So, and I get a lot out of, I think mainly now, you know, one of the big things now is seeing people develop through, and just inclusion, you know, and finding out what they like, and trying to actively sort of work with them and find out what pace they work at is really important. But really just highlighting the benefits, giving them opportunities where we can. You know, we're quite lucky that, you know, from Ganton we're able to utilize different aspects, and, you know, there's various things. Sort of one lad last week was over in Paris at an R&A's biodiversity seminar. You know, we've got a wildlife ecology group, and one of the lads who's just starred is really interested. So it's including him on there and just finding out and trying to play golf. You know, that's going back to the golf, you know, setting up a regular golf with people and seeing other golf courses, but really just making the workplace as enjoyable as it possibly can be. You know, it's there's not a day when I'm sitting in the office that you can't hear noise coming out of the lunchroom, which is really positive. And, you know, it's always chat. It always comes back to football, but it's really positive. But yeah, just, I think that being as open and honest as you can, being a nice person, and just really highlighting the benefits the industry can give. And I think that's the big thing, back to communication, that, you know, is through the industry, how we sell or communicate these opportunities that's available to everyone.
Fantastic, Simon. It's such a positive spin on what passion actually looks like in the workplace. And I thank you for that. I think that's, we're so happy to be sharing that with others. I can think of my past where that passion wasn't quite directed in such a civilized and polite way. It's fantastic to hear it can be done like you're doing it. Simon, thanks so much. Ben, anything else? Should we let Simon get back to his
I just wanted to thank Simon too. Yeah, I just wanted to thank Simon as well, and hopefully we can get you in to speak to some of our students at some point in time, have you up in St. Andrews and host you up there, obviously, as well. And the next time we're down your way, hopefully you'll invite us in for one of those amazing bacon rolls at the golf club.
Yeah, then. The door's always open. But yes, as I say, that would be good, and anything I can do to help, as I say, more than willing.
Fantastic, Simon. Thank you so much for your time. Wow, wasn't that fantastic, Ben? What a great insight it is to be a course manager in a modern world at a traditional club.
Absolutely brilliant to speak with Simon. What an incredible journey, Ian. You know, young head greenkeeper, and spoke about how being empowered at such a young age is something that he is now instilling upon his young staff, and really empowering the guys that work for him to learn about the job and to become the best greenkeepers or golf course managers they can possibly be. It's really inspiring.
I was really struck when he said 19.
Yeah.
Course manager at 19. Now, I've had quite a few conversations since then about that. He obviously handled it really well. But it's probably considered to be quite young. But then I was reflecting on other walks of life about how people in the hospitality industry are being put into management supervisory roles very early on, once they've proved some form of competency.
I mean, we're seeing it across sports. I can think of many examples from football here on this side of the pond, or American football on the other side of the pond. We're seeing head coaches and managers late 30s, early 40s, and getting amazing results, you know. And I think we have to give a shout out to the people that are giving these young folk an opportunity, because they're the ones that are really helping to sort of progress and develop and evolve the games as we know them. So well done to Simon for starting young and still going, and still young, to have to say, still young.
Yeah, still young. And the other role that he talked about so well, I thought, was this stewardship of the environment. You know, Simon brings to us a sharing his responsibilities that go beyond the fine turf, and it's the whole landscape of Ganton that he's enhancing and improving. And we need to explore that in more detail, you know, about the role of being on the golf courses is much more about construction, about renovation, about IPM strategies across the board. He's really in the thick of things down there.
He's one of these people I like to call a sustainability leader, you know, somebody that's really bringing sustainability into the industry, not just in his job. You know, it's not just a checkbox for him, or just, you know, a regulation to follow. It's an approach that Simon is clearly using at the golf club with incredible results. And one of the things that stood out for me was Simon saying, you know, when these sustainability efforts, as they should, result in better playing surfaces, the membership is on board at the drop of a hat. You know, they flick of a switch, they get it. They're doing right for the environment. And as a byproduct of that, the golf becomes even better and more enjoyable.
He's a very good communicator. And there's some links to Simon's writings in the Northern Golfer in our website as well. But we also picked it because of the venue. The venue is a typical example, in the UK at least, of a very what would be described as a very traditional club. Ganton is, you know,
steeped in tradition.
Steeped in tradition. The epitome of what a traditional club looks like, with a fine, fine history. But there you have a manager that's really taking it forward in terms of his man management, in terms of his environmental management, in terms of his sustainable agronomy practices. These are all cutting edge under Simon. And the club are
able to take them on board, you know, without there being any pain.
Certainly, Simon is definitely helping him on that journey. He's part of that experience of evolving the club and taking them into the future. You know, diving into the history for the USA to win the Ryder Cup in 1949, I think it was. They won 7-5. Ben Hogan as the non-playing captain after suffering a near-fatal car accident just before that, if we're to believe Wikipedia. You know, and here Simon is being ambitious and talking about the ambitions of the club to potentially host, you know, tournaments that they already are, but big tournaments as well into the future. You know, he has a clear vision for what he wants to do with the club, and he's going for it, and he's enabling and empowering his staff to help him along that journey.
It was a great podcast. We're so grateful to Simon, and we wish everybody at Ganton the very best for the season ahead.